perfect. Just wanted to say a few words. We regret that one of our panelists, actually the translator of Eva Libitsky's memoir from English into Polish, was to be part of our panel. Unfortunately, he got sick, but we believe that it's an extraordinary translation. I urge all of you to read it in whichever language you prefer, because it's a story that resonates with all of us. I would just like to take this.
This is the brand new, hot off the press Polish translation of. Of the book written by my mother, Eva Libitsky, and Fred Rosenbaum, our dear friend, who together collaborated to write this memoir. And so here it is in Polish.
So I'd just like to say, on behalf of the Toby Center and our Sfarim publishing project, we're very excited to have this, our first book of this year. We're delighted that the Libitsky family has shared so much in terms of stories, in terms of presence, and in terms of presence. And we'd like today to be, if possible, much more of a conversation. Both Moses and Yolanta are here to add some words, as is Eva, of course. But we would hope that this is a time and an opportunity to really speak to Eva and to Yolanta and to Moses. It's actually a meeting with the author by Skype. So without further ado, I would like to have Moses say a few opening remarks, and then we will move on with Yolanta, and then our time and focus is with Eva.
Good afternoon. Many of you here know me. I am Moses Libitsky. I'm Eva Libitsky's son. And as I said, she, along with our Fred, our dear friend, author, scholar, historian, teacher, Fred Rosenbaum, wrote this memoir of her that tells her story. Today we're here to honor the release of it in Polish. And with us today we have Dr. Hold on, Yolanta Ambrosevich Jacobs, right? Who is a professor of Holocaust studies at I'm not going to pronounce this either.
Jagiellonian
University. Okay, so let me introduce you to Mother Eva Libitsky, and I'm going to introduce you to Dr. Jagiellowicz. Sorry, Dr. Yolanta.
Okay, good afternoon. I wanted to say that I'm really honored to be a part of the panel to introduce Polish edition of a very, very meaningful book, in particular for contemporary Poland, and I will elaborate a bit more about it. And for those who haven't read the book, this is quoting Michael Berenbaum and his very beautiful foreword to the book, Journey to the Land of Darkness. The book written by Mrs. Libitsky, who as a Hasidic girl from Hasidic girl family survived the Lodz Ghetto, Auschwitz, subcamp of Flossenbürg-Ederan, Theresienstadt. She also described her life in a DP camp, how difficult it was for survivors to get out of Europe, out of Germany, how many years it took, and then her life with family in Colchester, in Connecticut, then Manchester, and since 1991 in South Florida. I was very, very moved reading this book. I read the Polish translation, which is very, really beautiful, and I would like to thank Sergiusz Kowalski for this beautiful, touching translation of your book, Mrs. Lipitsky. Also, I would like to thank Fred Rosenbaum for this very, very colorful research. And I guess I'm speaking today because of my background. I teach at the Jagiellonian University, the UNESCO Chair for Education about the Holocaust, which is located within Institute of European Studies. At the university in Krakow, but I also organized for 13 years Summer Institute for Polish teachers. So I was very, very interested in your trips to schools, your visits and talks to American students, because this is what we emphasize here, to work with high school students for the future, to learn from the past, to be conscious of contemporary issues and to build a better future. And I think, I deeply believe that your book will play a crucial role in this process in Poland. I was in particular interested in trauma of the survivor, but also the second generation. What factors determine overcoming trauma? And I would like to refer to Dominique Lacapra, who used this category, working through versus acting out. What determines really overcoming trauma? This is, I think, very, very important message for not only for the survivors, not only for the second and third generation, but for survivors of many traumatic events which were in the past and also are going, unfortunately, still going on. And you wrote about friendship, the role of friendship, the role of substitute families, the role of women, support, and also good luck. But I think your determination was something which really touched me, because this determination, I think, is very rare in such dark times. So this was like a light inside of you, which I actually followed reading pages of your book. And overcoming negative emotion, because the honesty, it's something extremely important what I found in your book. You deal with difficult emotions, overcoming hate, anger, and will to revenge. You also wrote about good German in Oderman, and you also wrote about anti-Semitism in pre-war Poland, which is very important to challenge our Polish collective identity nowadays. And it was very painful to me, in particular, being Polish, to read that on the second day of German invasion, Poles actually plundered the shop of your parents. And I really dare to say that young Poles do not know those facts. That's why I believe working with teachers is crucial, because there are key persons who can tell young Poles how was it. And I would like to say at the end of my short introduction that Bernard Russell, British mathematician and writer and Nobel laureate, asked what's the most important to really for the future. He said to really look at the facts and interpret in a proper way those facts. And your book is full of facts which should be known for Poles, and also not only for Poles, but I'm speaking about this current edition. So thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for this beautiful book.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you.
You know,
when
okay. Let's turn off that mic. Can you hear us better now? Is that better?
I hear you.
Okay. Okay, so we're going to do something. And you're breaking up. It's a little hard to hear you, but we'll do the best we can, okay? So maybe you have to move a little closer to the microphone. We have a very poor connection here, and we're doing the best we can with it, okay? So I'm going to, first of all, Yolanta's marks were quite lovely. She said that it's a remarkable book, and she thanked you for all that you shared with everybody through it. One thing she mentioned at the end, I'm going to ask a question or two, and then I'm going to open it up to the audience, because the audience may have some questions for you. So let me ask first. She talked about, you know, your humanity, and I remember in one part of the book, you talked about how you anger overcame you at one point, and you were just living to take revenge on the Germans. Yet at the time of liberation, you saw a Russian tank dragging a German through the street, and all of a sudden, it was no longer you. You were just looking at this human being, and you just couldn't think of extracting revenge anymore. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, Mother?
Yes. I saw a human being. I saw his body. I said, enough action. See, he said,
okay, I don't know that we. Ellie, I'm going to ask. We're going to do something. We're going to have a technical revision. Okay, what you might want to do is turn off the sound on Skype. We'll keep the picture. Can you do that? Click off the sound. And I think I'm going to call in on the telephone, and maybe we'll do this by phone. Okay.
Everybody okay?
Yes.
Yeah. So why don't you click off this?
What about FaceTime?
Click off the sound. There should be a microphone. If you move the cursor, okay, you got it? Okay, so the sound is turned off. I'm going to call on my phone, okay? And we're going to try to do this by phone. Maybe you can turn on the speakerphone there, okay?
Hello?
Yes. You have to have the sound off on the Skype for this to work, okay?
Why can you hear me on Skype?
You have to turn off the microphone.
Turn down the volume.
Or turn on the volume all the way on the computer. Some technical difficulty. Yeah, turn off the volume on the computer. Okay. You got it?
All right.
Okay, let's see how that works. All right. Say hello.
Speakerphone. I'm doing the speakerphone. Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. Can you hear us?
Yes. Now we can hear you.
Okay.
Okay. I think this is better, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So can you repeat what you said, Mother, about what you saw?
I also, maybe a little from the microphone.
No,
maybe.
It's okay. Repeat what you said about when you saw the soldier being dragged.
Want me to repeat what I said?
Why don't you get the microphone closer? Why don't you get the phone closer to you? Let's try this.
Now it's better?
Now it's better.
Is it better now?
Yes. Yes?
Yes,
speak now.
Yes. What do you want me to tell you about the soldier dragging?
Yes, yes.
I was in quarantine. I was behind the wire, still in quarantine, even after liberation. But when I saw the Russian was dragging the soldier with his feet tied down to the tank, and he was bloody, it was an awful sight. And I embraced my friend Regina, and we cried both. It's enough already of bloodshed. We saw enough of bloodshed. It's enough. I cannot see it anymore. And we looked away.
So the anger was really replaced by compassion.
By compassion, but by humanity. I became a human being, not an animal. Like, they were animals, and I was a human being, and my heart broke to see that.
Yes.
It's enough. I couldn't see it anymore.
Yes. And, you know, Yolanda also spoke about the relationships you formed. That was another part of, you know, how they never took humanity away from you. That wherever you were, you seemed to get, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 girls. And together, you became much stronger than individuals.
We had to have that support. If we wouldn't have the support for one another, we would never make it. We had the support, and one helped another to hold on. We gave courage to each other. We got to live. We got to live, and we got to take revenge. That was our goal, to live.
But in the end, when it came time to take revenge...
We had all kinds of... We had pictured all kinds of tortures we put on them when we survive, when we live, and we'll see the tortures that we put on them, that we'll do. And yet, when time came, we couldn't do it.
Yes, yeah.
Because we are human beings still.
I know.
We couldn't do it.
Yes.
We will cut them in pieces and put salt on them. We will tie them to 2 horses and let the horses around and split them. All kinds of the most horrible things that went to our mind that we will do once we survive. And that's what makes us go. We got to live to do that.
So it's amazing that through all this, your humanity was never taken away.
Right? Never. Yeah. No. We couldn't do that.
We, yesterday, or when was it, 2 days ago, we actually went to lunch with the group here, and we went and we saw where you grew up, where Dad also grew up. We went to the place in the ghetto where you ended up. We saw the cemetery where, by the way, a number of us said Kaddish over your father and your grandfather.
It looks the same.
It looks the same because that's Lodz in general. It looks the same. But it was a very powerful experience for many people. And I don't know if anybody here in the audience has anything they'd like to say or ask. And if you'd like to just raise your hand and I'll repeat it to my mother and she can address it. So anybody? Yes, Eileen. Okay. Well, the group is in Krakow now.
Okay.
Is there anything they should see while they're here?
Anything?
Well, we're going to go to Auschwitz tomorrow.
When they go to Auschwitz? Yes, if you can take it, you know. Ultra Auschwitz, you know how it looked, and Black 24.
Yeah.
Black 24, where I was laying on the ground like herrings, like sardines, five of us, on the ground. You were right close, we were not far, close to the entrance, and you were laying on the ground in the mud.
Yeah.
For months.
Yeah.
6 weeks.
So that's what we'll see here in Krakow.
And then, you know, the toilets, the halls, with groups going to the toilet, okay. And just a limited time. And the water dripping, and he was staying in eight, and the water was dripping, the thing, and to be counted in the appeal. And the water was dripping, and he could not allow to reach to have a sip of water.
Yeah. For me, it's quite a contrast. The subhumanity that the Germans treated the Jews in the ghetto. They treated them as subhumans, yet to me it's remarkable to see in my mother the humanity that never went away. It's really something. So, Roger, did you have a question? I saw you raise your hand. Go ahead.
Meaning withholding to your mom that a group like us is visiting Auschwitz? What meaning does it have to your mom that groups like ours are going to visit Auschwitz?
Well, okay, so one member of our group wants to know what meaning it has to you that a group like ours is going to visit Auschwitz.
I couldn't understand you.
The group would like to know. You can't hear?
Can you hear? Can you hear now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
The group wants to know what meaning it has to you to have a group like ours visit Auschwitz and to visit the ghetto.
What meaning does it have to you to have a group like his there? Right? That's what you meant?
Yes.
What
meaning does it have to you to have a group like this visit Auschwitz? Okay?
It's very important because people have to live, they have to see, they have to know what happened, that history can repeat itself. That what people, what human beings can do to other human beings. It's very important, this is history, very important. So from generation to generation, they need to know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, go ahead. Okay. A technical difficulty. Okay. Repeat that again. What? Can you repeat it?
I can hear you.
Can you repeat what you said?
I said it's very important that generation to generation should go and see what happened. Because reading, not only reading, but seeing makes an impact on them. And this is what they have to carry on from generation to generation when they see it. And it's very important. That's why we're teaching, we're going to schools and we're teaching generations, children, to carry it on and tell the world what happened, what could happen. It could happen again if we are not cautious, we're not aware of it.
Yes.
Aggie.
Can you tell us a little bit about the process of writing the book? How was it for you? Did it bring up the traumatic memories from the past? Did you find it difficult to deal with the past again? Was it cathartic? I would like to hear more about the process.
Did you hear that? The question was, what was it like for you to write the book? Was it traumatic?
It was awful hard. I'm glad I wrote it, but it was awful hard. Many nights, I spent many sleepless nights, and I cried every night because I relived every moment of it. And it's important what they read in the book, and they see it becomes more real. That's for me so important that groups go and see it, because only reading that they see it, it makes it more real.
How many times did you quit? Do you remember?
Well, I quit. At one time the book was done. About two-thirds of the book, and I said, "This is it. I'm not going on anymore. I can't do it. I'm getting sick, and I can't do it anymore." And I just didn't want to go on. It wouldn't be for you and Susan and Anne that would encourage me that I have to go on. I have to finish this book that I did. But I couldn't go on. It was too painful. Especially Fred Rosenbaum. He was so persistent. He wanted to. He dug in me because he wanted to know every detail. And he got out of the detail. He even went to those places. And I don't know if they hear me what I'm saying.
Yes.
He went to those places. He had to see on his own in order to write it in that it was so what I told him. Every word what I told him was researched by him.
Yes.
And it was very painful. I couldn't go out. At one point I said, "This is enough. I can't do it. I'm getting sick." But it was a gift. I wanted to leave the gift to my children. If I'm gone, they should remember. My children, next generation, should carry it on and on and let the world know what happened. Not to forget, ever forget.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Anybody else have a question or comment they'd like to make?
Hi. Hi, Moses. Nice to see you.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
Hi, Jonathan. Hey.
Hello. So
Jonathan from the JCC is here. Remember?
Oh. Hi, Eve. It's nice to see you. You're looking good.
Jonathan from the JCC. Remember Jonathan? Yes.
Anyway, I remember a few years ago when you visited and you came and you came to Krakow with many members of your family, a few generations, and had a chance to connect to the Jewish community today. And I wonder, seeing all that you've seen and having read your book and really enjoyed it and understanding what you've been through, what are your feelings about the Jewish community today, the idea that there is a rebirth of Jewish life in Poland, in cities like Warsaw and Krakow? Young people are finding out they're Jewish and choosing to get involved. And you, who comes from here and has seen so many different things over your life, during the course of your life, what do you think about the idea of Jewish life once again flourishing in Poland?
I don't know if you heard that, Mother. Did you hear the question?
No.
No.
Okay, the question... Yeah, no. The question was this. Well, I can't. She gets an echo. If I don't cover it over, then she gets an echo and she can't hear me. Okay. No. All right. I need a sound expert up here, David. The question is, how do you feel about the renewal of Jewish life now in Poland, in places like Warsaw and Krakow, to see...
But the last time when I was in Poland?
Yes.
I had the opinion of Poland, the opinion, I had a very bad opinion of Poland, because I went through the worst time of anti-Semitism and the worst time for Jews. But the last time when I was in Poland, I came back with my heart was feeling much better, because I saw the new generation is completely different. The new generation understands the intelligence, they understand, they are completely different, and they friends, they were friends. I was at the JCC, and they came to help, and the students were helping, and the students then came to me and were interested to know what happened. I was very, very pleased, because I saw a big change in Poland since the first time I went to Poland. Even the first time when we went to Poland, you, Susan, Ann, and Nathan, when we went to Poland, and we saw all these little children that were showing Jew,
yeah.
That, you know, that hatred. We saw it. But then later, when we last time when we went, I was very, very pleased not to see this anymore.
Do you remember when you went to the Jewish day school in Warsaw?
I went to the Jewish day school, and I saw the children playing, and I saw non-Jewish children were coming there to school to get a better education, and I saw non-Jewish young people to help. This pleased me very, very much. It changed completely my opinion.
Yes.
On Poland now. And I hope they continue.
I think you had some words for Hitler at the time, too, didn't you? I think you had some words for Hitler when you saw the school. Yes.
I said Hitler would live to see what happened.
Yes, she said, Hitler, see, you didn't succeed. Yes.
Yeah, there's still a new generation of Jewish children growing up that he did not destroy us. So he wanted to destroy all the Jews, all the Jewish culture, but he did not succeed in it. He still he left a little flame, and the flame grew.
Okay. Anybody else would like? Yes. Yes.
Hello.
We have a question, Mom. We have a question.
When you survived Holocaust and emigrated to the U.S., did you practice Jewish tradition and remember about your past? Thank you very much.
The question was, when you immigrated to the U.S., did you practice Jewish custom, Jewish tradition? How connected were you to things from the past?
Yes.
When we immigrated to the United States,
I practiced Jewish tradition. Even when I came to the United States, that is where I even light candles for Shabbat. Tradition was very important. Maybe I lost the faith that I once believed in, but the tradition was very important. And I continue, even if I came to America, I continued a lot of my old habits.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yes.
Okay. Yolanta has some questions, so I'm going to turn you over to her. Hold on.
Okay, Mrs. Libitsky, your book has two dimensions. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, but there's an echo from the microphone. It's a very big echo.
Okay.
Yeah, we have to.
So, Mrs. Libitsky, I think your book has two dimensions. One is a personal journey to the past, and second is actually facts which I believe will have impact on academia. What I mean is that you presented facts, historical facts, counteracting some mythology which is still present in Poland. One component of this mythology is that Poland was so hospitable to Jews. You counteracted by presenting hostility of Poles toward Jews before the war and after the war. This is very, very important. Can you repeat, maybe?
Yeah, we need to... Let me see if we can repeat the question now, so you can hear. Okay? She said that.
It's not.
You still have an echo?
Not from here.
Yeah. Turn that down. Turn down the sound on there. And we're going to do it all through the phone. That's it. That's it.
That mic right here.
Yeah. Okay. Can you hear? But there's a less echo now.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so let's try the question again. Okay,
what was the question?
The question was, I believe, that... let's repeat it for me, quickly.
Okay, so I think the book is important for academia as well. It has facts which counteract mythology still present in Poland about the attitudes of Poland.
The microphone on the computer. Let's see. Let's see if that's better. That better, Mother?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you hear better now?
I can hear you. Yes, I can hear you clearly.
Okay. Good. And now we can turn this microphone back on, I believe. So go ahead and ask your question again.
Okay, Mrs. Libitsky, your book has two dimensions. One is your personal process of coming to terms with extremely painful past, and the second dimension, it's an academic dimension. Your book has very important historical facts counteracting certain mythology, Polish mythology, that Poland was so hospitable to Jews, because you present facts, historical facts of hostility of Poles toward Jews before the war and after the war. And I believe it's very important for young generations to know about it, to build very integrated identity. The second point is, I think your book also challenges certain implants of social collective memory, not only Polish memory. Implants, I mean, for example, the Auschwitz as a symbol of the Holocaust, but the gate, the Auschwitz gate, were not seen by majority of Jews, and you write about it in your book, because you wrote that you were taken from the Oświęcim railway station directly to Birkenau, as majority of Jews never saw the gate which became the symbol of the Holocaust. So I think your book has a very transformative power in a scholarship, for scholarship and for Polish and not only Polish words, collective memory of the Holocaust. So this is of also very important dimension which will last and will have impact on scholarship.
So
I have to say thanks to my co-author. Fred Rosenbaum, who insisted, and he dug into me on very little detail, and thanks to him that he made me remember all those little details, which are true.
Now, if I can add too, there were occasionally arguments, I wouldn't call them arguments, discussions, because my mother would insist that things happened one way, and Fred would say, no, it's different, you know, that the historical record is different. And yet we researched it, and it turned out that my mother and her recollection was correct. You remember things like that?
Yes.
Yeah, and I'll give one example. Is the ghetto, the Lodz ghetto, was officially opened in February of 1940. Yet my mother insisted that her family was put into the ghetto at least 2 months before. And it turns out that this is true, that the ghetto was not officially opened, but they'd already begun moving Jews almost immediately, particularly in the part of town where she...
This area earlier.
Yeah.
Before when the ghetto closed already, all the Jews were evacuated from Lodz, were evacuated already to ghetto by then, when the ghetto was closed. But a lot started to be moved earlier.
Yeah, she lived in an area of many Volksdeutsche, and they wanted to move more Germans in there early. So it turned out it was true that roughly in December of 1939, her family got moved to the area, Baluti, that we saw the other day, that eventually became the ghetto before it was officially the ghetto. Is that right?
Yeah, and while we were with Italy, we were able to take some stuff out from the house and move it with us to the ghetto.
And I think many of you saw the story of how she snuck back and forth, retrieving valuables and bringing them to this house, even though it was not allowed; it was forbidden.
I think about it. Where did I get that courage, that strength, and that courage to do that? I knew that I'm taking my life into my hands, and how dangerous it is. But yet I was determined to do it, and I did it.
Yeah.
And I was very proud of myself that I was able to do it. And I was only 15 years old. So I just turned into 16.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was this child I was protected. I was naive and protected. I didn't know about anything of survival. I had parents who tempted me, worried about me, and all of a sudden I became the grown up. All of a sudden I was the one, I was the protector.
Yes. So
the consensus made you grow up very, very fast.
Yes, it makes you grow up very fast. I've actually, you know, my mother's spoken to student groups, and I've spoken to student groups, and I spoke to a group of 10th graders, and I pointed out to them that my mother was their age when the war started,
their age, and think about what they would have done, and how she had to take responsibility for many people in her family because she could. So it's amazing the things that you're you were able to do when you're pushed to the limit. So anyone else? If not, then maybe we'll say thank you to my mother.
I want also to mention that when I took the young people on the March of the Living, I don't know if you people, when they heard about the March of the Living.
Yes.
And yes, we took young people on the March of the Living to show them everything. And what they saw, this purpose of survivors, to speak, to talk, and to teach. Everybody, many people wrote memoirs, but every memoir is important, because it's for the future generations. And the kids that we took off the map of the living, they will never forget what they saw. It was the most important grit that they could make. It was very hard for me too. It was very hard, but no matter how hard I was, I felt rewarded. I felt I did something. I am here for a reason. I'm here alive for a reason. And the reason is, as long as I can teach, whether to write or to talk or to teach, never to forget, I'm here for a reason. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mama.
Sharing my book. And yeah, Moses, I'm telling you, Moses, you are really, have to put him on the pedestal that he started all this prayer. Moses insisted on writing the book because he wanted to have for the future generation. Moses is taking people to Poland. Moses is showing them. Moses took the whole family to Poland. We took care, he paid for it, and took care so everybody, whatever possible, should go and see. Moses, you are the hero. You are the hero. If it wouldn't be you, I wouldn't be a risk. If it wouldn't be for you, so many wouldn't go and come and see with their own eyes, not only from the book, but to see from their own eyes. You are the hero. Thank you,
Mother. You're the hero, and thank you very much for you know, saying that. So thank you. Thank you, everybody else here. Thanks you.
Not true yet. He's going to take more groups and show. And this is makes me very, very proud. Makes me feel very good. Very good.
Thank you. So thank you very much, Mother. This is my mother, and I hope everybody enjoyed meeting her. I wish you could meet her in person. She's an incredible lady. So thank you.
Okay, Mom. Thank you, Mom. Thank you, Ellie. And we're going to say goodbye, okay? Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Enjoy the rest of the trip. So you're going to Auschwitz today?
Tomorrow?
Yes. You're going to Auschwitz tomorrow?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Today you're in Warsaw, in Krakow.
Yes. Okay, Mom. Okay. Love you. Bye-bye.
I love you. I love you. Love you, sweetheart.
Bye-bye.
My heart.
Bye, Ellie. Love you, too.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. We can continue.
We have a few more minutes for maybe some more questions, especially for Moses or Eve of Pani Yolanta.
Yes. If you allow me, I have a question regarding the trauma of second generation. There is a new emerging subdiscipline called epigenetics, which actually claims, and it has been empirically proved, that we actually inherit trauma from our ancestors, and not only from our parents, but grandparents, great-grandparents, not only socially, not as a transmission, intergenerational social transmission, but as a result of genes. So my question to Moses is whether you actually in your life felt that you were traumatized And if, how did you feel and did you work consciously with this trauma, whether it was a case or maybe you were not traumatized? And the reason I'm asking is because my mother, who lost her brother, who was a slave laborer in Germany and then shot by Germans, and then she was a survivor of the Gulag, never overcame trauma. So this is very, I'm fascinated by life of your mother, truly, and yours also, because you became a carrier of memory of your ancestors. But can you please tell me and us about whether you encounter trauma yourself?
Well, I've actually thought about this, about, you know, how much the trauma has influenced me. And, you know, growing up, going through adolescence and through your 20s, you have so many traumas, it's hard to figure out which trauma is the dominant trauma. You know, it's a traumatic time. And I remember at one point I joined a group of second-generation people where they talked about how much all their troubles were related to the fact that they were children of survivors. And my reaction was, oy. You don't dwell on these things. You learn from these things and you move forward. And I think what I got, what you can tell from my mother's spirit, is a spirit, first of all, to always look forward, that looking backward, you look backward to remember and to learn, but not to dwell. And that you live life, as she says herself, you live life moving forward. And so it's a very positive attitude, not a negative attitude, a very positive attitude that I picked up from both my parents. An attitude of, I mean, talk about trauma, some of the things I put them through, you know, growing up in some very interesting times, was really quite something. But yet I was really impressed by how well they adapted to me and all the nonsense I was going through, that they actually gave me respect and treated it seriously. And that meant a lot to me. And it's indicative of how they dealt with things always. They always dealt with things with integrity, with intelligence, with respect, and with a forward look. And I think that's really what I learned from them, that anything's possible. And compared to the difficulties they went through, whatever difficulties I happened to run across, really didn't compare.
Okay, thank you. You have a question?
So I would like to take this opportunity to thank Moses, to thank Eva, and to thank Dr. Ambrosevich Jacobs for joining us in this extraordinary conversation. We apologize on behalf of the communication, but I think more important was the spirit and the intention of today's meeting. And if anything that came through was Eva's honesty, as we spoke about in the beginning, her determination to share the story, and as Moses just concluded, her determination that we should be moving forward while remembering and trying to convey it to the next generation, to transmit it, but also to move forward and to build with Tikkun Olam, a better world. I'm honored. I had the privilege of traveling with Eva and the family. When you travel with families, you get the best parts of the family, but you don't always get the mishigas, but maybe you do. But it was a real pleasure and an honor to meet Eva. I had the opportunity to go with her, as many of us in this room did, to see the sites that she talks about, the places of her memory in Łódź. And I have to say, she left me, was indelibly printed in my neshama, in my soul, a sense of dignity, humanity, and the sense that we are all responsible for a better future. So I'm indebted to your mother, you, and to the amazingly inspiring remarks that Dr. Yolanta has brought to our conversation. So to conclude, I encourage you to read the book. I encourage you to read as many books, as to listen to as many stories or conversations, to ask many questions, And I want to also thank our partners at Osteria for having put together an absolutely exquisite edition of the book. And again, to Sergiusz, who could not be here, who took not only the words and the facts, but he transposed them, and as I should say, not only translated, but transposed them in such a way that makes it warm, accessible to all of us. So, unless you want to add anything, Moses, as a sign-off?
Just one thing about this translation. This is brand new, hot off the presses, literally. It was just delivered. This is the first time I set eyes on it. But my mother did get a chance to review the first chapter just to see if they were doing a good job, and she gave it a real thumbs up. She says it's accurate, and it's very well done. So thank you to Sergiusz, and thank you to the publishers. It's really a remarkable thing. I'm so proud and pleased to have it available now in Polish as well as English. So thank you, and thank you, Doctor.
Thank you. If you have any questions, we're